step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again. This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 550. I'm Lisa Sheps, joined on this Wednesday by my co-host extraordinaire, Ms. Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live on KOOP.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on Off Stage and On the Air.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
Matt's show. It is Wednesday, January 8th. 2020. On the show today, we have Jarrett Productions and their performance of The Niceties. And then later on, we'll be talking to Austin Playhouse and their show, Tiny Beautiful Things. And of course, we will have news and views of the world of theater in Austin, Texas, New York City, New York, Chicago, Illinois, Los Angeles, California, and Omaha, Nebraska. Stick with us.
To Christopher Street, the road not taken. Just 4 miles from our...
Okay, Christopher Street was the first street in New York that I stayed in when I first visited New York City in 1976.
It's a teeny little street.
It's a teeny little street.
I lived right around the corner from
it. I lived three buildings down from Sheridan Square and... Wait, hold on. Say it again.
I saw the commemorative marker last time I was there.
It's there. Lisa Shep slept here.
the bench.
So we're back. It's, the past two episodes here, it was on Christmas Day and New Year's, and I did it solo, and we played music. It was very relaxing.
It was holiday-centric.
It was very different from a normal offstage and on the air. But so we're back. It's 2020.
It is.
Not 2020. Not.
I know. You're trying to get me to do the Barbara Walters 2020 because she won't leave my head.
I don't know what the Barbara Walters 2020 is.
Oh, come Lisa, on. You keep saying Barbara Walters and the show, no, and this
I know
is 2020.
She signed on and off every time with
2020.
This
yes.
is 2020.
This is 2020.
This is 2020.
Not a program I watched.
It doesn't matter, but I'm like, at what point during the year does that stop playing in your head?
To me,
2021.
There you go. Checking in with you very quickly.
Well, it's 2020.
Okay.
And I'm excited because I'm going to the Olympics, people, and I've been counting down for 4 years to 2020.
Way.
And I realized, oh my gosh, that's like 6 months from now.
Yep.
That's like 6 months from now. I will be at the opening ceremony. Okay. Screaming like a lunatic.
So off stage and on the air, listeners, you will be hearing that once a week for the next 6 months.
It's very exciting, Lisa.
Let's introduce the folks that are here with us. We have Barbara Chisholm. Hi, welcome back.
Hi, thank you for having us. Oh. It's lovely to be here.
Of course, Lowell Bartholomew.
Hello, it's 2020.
It is, it's 2020. Francesca Christian.
Hello, great to see you again.
Great to see you. Jackie Calloway.
Great to be here.
Jerry Rashad Brown.
Hey, Lisa.
And Mr. David Jarrett.
Hello, hello.
Awesome. Well, that first little song was Maps from a show called Fun Home. Anybody have any idea why I decided to play that to start off the show?
I do.
No, not because Ground Floor Theater did it last season and won every award that they possibly could, but...
That was my guess.
No, there's some new news about it.
There is some new news. So Jake Gyllenhaal is going to be producing a film version... Starring.
Hold on. Wait for it. Ready?
Jake Gyllenhaal.
He had to hold extensive auditions for that.
Right. It was down to the wire.
He decided on Jake Gyllenhaal. He was torn on who would he cast.
If he uses his power for that good, I'm behind that.
Yeah, no, I'm just teasing. Yeah. I don't have a problem with it at all.
Do we know who else?
No, he doesn't have anything else yet.
I thought I saw... I did see other stuff.
Did Dear Evan Hansen? I think
there's a lot of people. There's conjecture, but there's nothing definitive.
Gotcha.
And people are making guesses. And some people want to see Beth Level come back.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I have a problem with that.
She was my least favorite actor in the show.
Huh.
Well, I know. Who knows why? But I'm all in favor. And Jake Gyllenhaal can do no wrong these days.
I am all about the fun home on the big screen.
Okay. Well, good. We got that item.
We're starting off 2020 agreeing, Lisa.
Anybody see the Golden Globes? Anybody want to talk about the Golden Globes? I don't really, but I'm just...
No.
No. Okay.
No and no.
Yeah,
no,
I was like, good. I don't know why they're on there.
I wrote Golden Globes ?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. And there we go. ?
There we go. It's done. Greta Gerwig.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Another golden child of the film world.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is got a musical on tap.
Yes.
And we don't know what it is, but she says...
It's a musical.
One thing I feel that the world is really missing right now is tap dancing.
I agree.
I'm just going to say that, she says.
I'm just going to agree with her on that one.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we're just getting right through these things.
Oh, it's
right.
Little Women the Musical with tap dancing.
Little Women the Musical.
There you go.
Well, there already is a Little Women the Musical. We just have to add
I know,
tap.
But with tap dancing.
Tap dancing. Yeah.
So here's a little bit of sad news. And this actually made me sad. The New York Musical Theater Festival, otherwise known as NYMPH, after 15 years, it shut its doors.
It made me sad, too.
Kind of quickly. It was announced quickly, but evidently it was in the works for a while. And they announced last Thursday in a statement, they said, because of the nationwide arts funding crisis, I think we can all understand that. That caught up with the festival and they had to close. They've had more than 400 shows have premiered there.
Yes, and have gone on.
Two have gone to Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
One was Title of Show, which was. Does everybody know that show? Title of Show.
I don't.
It's a meta show. It's a show about creating a show for the New York Musical Theater Festival. It's actually quite cute.
It's pretty inside baseball.
It is very inside baseball, mm-hmm. But it made it to Broadway. It did well. It did okay.
Did you see it?
I saw a production here.
Oh, okay. I'm like,
I forgot who did it here.
I've heard
the City
Theater. Kansas State did it recently, but somebody else might have done it also.
It's a cute show. Mm-hmm. And I like the way it's, because it's title of show in brackets.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, lowercase. Mm.
Right.
Yep. And the other show was a little not so well-known show called Next to Normal.
Mm. Which has some new news, too.
That made it, what's the new news?
They're gonna do it and announce that oh my gosh, Hamilton Brandon Dixon is going to be starring in it.
Oh, wow.
They just announced.
Oh, you
casting.
Talk. This is a
remount. Yes.
Oh, it's a full production.
Yes, and they're getting director to come back and do it again.
Have not heard that.
It just all came out like in the last hour.
Wow.
Boy, that is breaking news.
That is breaking news.
You hear it here. Breaking news. Here, Barbara Chisholm. We are hard hitting.
In 2020.
In 2020.
Yeah, we need this. Okay. So it closed its door. But here's one of the things that I found interesting is like a lot of the people from the 2019 season have not. So the shows come in and it's a festival like we all have, think Frontera Fest or any of these others, and the box office typically goes to the productions, but they haven't been paid for 2019, and probably won't. And one of the shows that was in last year's festival, which we played a little bit of piece of music here, was something that I thought was going to be pretty interesting, and it still may go on to something. It's Till, about Emmett Till,
mm-hmm.
And that sounds interesting. And then the artistic director and other staff has been working without pay since January.
I was about to say, I think they've all been working without pay for a long time.
But I'm hoping some other organization either starts something similar or somebody does something to bring it back. It was a pretty good festival. I actually went one year. I tried to get press tickets once. They wouldn't give them to me.
Do they have any relationship with NAMP, National Association of Musical Theater?
No, it's their own thing.
Their own thing.
And that's where I saw Hillary and Clinton. Hillary the musical.
I was about to say it was the musical one.
But I believe Hillary and Clinton was the same season.
I think it was. But you did, you saw the musical.
Yeah,
Hillary and Clinton.
Hillary and Clinton.
Yes.
And
that is
then,
one thing. And then there's Hillary the musical.
Yep, saw them both. No, I just saw one of them.
Keep up.
Can't remember what I've seen, Barbara Chisholm.
God.
Okay. All right. So that's very sad news. Let's see what we have that could be less sad. The amount of closings in the past 2 weeks.
Oh.
We've lost Waitress, mm-hmm. Tootsie, The mm-hmm. Illusionist, Lightning Thief, Christmas Carol.
That one wasn't so much a surprise.
Fiddler on the Roof in Yiddish closed. And very big news, Chicago company, Hamilton Company in Chicago closed. And I found this was interesting because
they've served more people than New York City.
Right. Well,
because the house size.
The house size is a lot bigger than
But still, in their amount, in their run, they have served more patrons and have more people have seen the show in Chicago than they have in New York City.
Yeah. And it has played to 100% of its potential mm-hmm. every week for 3 years.
And they're also the ones that got the historical, the rolling show that has the history exhibit
Hamilton,
that you can
the exhibit.
Walk through. Yes,
yeah,
which
but that
I
was
think
a,
is like, whoa.
It was a big flop. That was a...
It's still cool.
It doesn't exist anymore, I don't think.
No, they were only doing it there in the first place. They gave them that land, and the whole plan was it to eventually go on the road and be mobile.
Yep, but it didn't.
It wasn't supposed to go on the road right away. So
it's not going to.
You don't know that.
Well, it was a bit... It was universally considered a failure in Chicago, so I don't know why they would... Anyway, but we'll see. It could be wrong. She might have some inside scoop. She seems to know things.
Never say never.
They made more than $400 billion in gross sales.
$400 million.
Oh,
okay.
And I'll say that with my pinky in my mouth, just like whatever that is.
Oh, yeah.
So Barbara, had the same question about, so why, mm-hmm. why close? And I thought this was a very interesting thing because they could... go on, but the brand of Hamilton mm-hmm. is in there. They're calling it sold as a sophisticated luxury good, and if they started selling discounted seats or things like that, the road shows are going to Milwaukee and all these other cities that are very close to Chicago. So that was going to take away from the Chicago audiences, and if they had like three empty seats in the house, that would just be bad for the brand. So they were going to sell it. It is, the roadshow is coming back mm-hmm. to Chicago as well. What's his name? I'm going to come up with his name. He played Hamilton. Longest running Hamilton of anybody that played in Chicago.
Who is that?
I'm going to come up with his name.
All right.
He was the guy that was a standby for Lynn.
Miguel Cervantes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
So...
It's already back in Houston on the tour, and it's still doing 4 week runs, and it's still
so. Here's the question. Here's for extra credit in Chicago, because that's where we are. was Hamilton the longest running show in Chicago history?
I don't think it is.
Barbara says no. Anybody else?
I say no.
I think it's Wicked.
No, the answer is yes.
Oh, it is.
I'm teasing. It's no. It's Wicked.
Come on.
I was like, I don't think so. And I was about to, pull up the...
That was funny. did anybody see the article in New York Times about how they've covered, West Side Story? Because you know it opened in 1957.
Oh, yes.
1957. I was not even born.
You weren't. Yeah, that's right.
I was a glint in my parents' eye, but I was not. I was not out. So, still not out. The mention, it was very first mentioned in 1956, and they couldn't remember what it was called. It was referred to by its working title, Gangway.
That sounds like it would go far.
Which was not, it's a working title. That was a joke that Arthur Lawrence did, who wrote it. He said in a book that came out later, he said, West Side Story, this was a bad joke. It was a mock title. It even made it onto the back of the scenery, so it was never going to be called Gangway.
They wanted to call it title of show, but it was taken.
They did. It was already taken in future. So in 1922, where did it go? It doesn't say what year, but early days, there was only, in the very first production, 1957, there were only two Latinx performers.
Oh,
One was Chita Rivera. Yeah.
I was about to say, I think I knew this. It isn't one Chita.
And the other was Jaime Sanchez, who played Chino. But this is New York City.
Oh,
like,
my
God. And not only could they get any Latinx performer, but they had their pick of Puerto Rican performers in that city.
Holy moly.
Found
really
that
surprised by this.
I found that interesting.
Yeah.
No, we aren't.
Yeah.
We aren't surprised at all. They did. There was a big to-do at the same time about, you know, the lyric, Puerto Rico, land of tropic diseases. They did not like that. The Puerto Ricans were not happy about that.
I wonder.
But it was a rhyme thing. That's what they said.
So sorry about your hurt feelings, but this scans.
This works. Rhymes really well.
No, that makes sense.
There was a whole...
why should I look through 500,000 other words to find another?
Right.
In 1959, a whole bunch of Bolshoi dancers came to see the show. They couldn't understand anything, but they went backstage afterwards and played. They had a post-show mambo lesson with the cast of West Side Story.
Okay.
And they tried
That's
to
kind
make
of interesting.
They tried to make one of the New York Times Moscow correspondents tried to make he filed a dispatch in the form of a letter to the drama editor, criticizing the State Department's decision not to sanction a tour to Moscow lest it promote, quote, an unglamorous aspect of American life. 1959. And then, of course, 1961 was the movie. And this will be a test. There was one star performer that was not credited. Do people know who that is?
No.
Star performer.
In a leading role?
In a very leading role. Yeah, it's a little misleading. Marnie Nixon,
sang Natalie Wood's
role. But she did
role.
Not even, nowhere in the credits was it in there. She actually had to sue to get royalties. And the only reason why she got royalties is because... oh, God, what's his name? Jerome Robbins gave a little bit of his royalties for her.
She is a bad agent, huh?
Well, she was. I mean,
manager?
That was back in the day.
Well,
I don't think you would have
covered that before.
I don't think she was built for South Pacific or what was the other one she did?
Oh, she did a few.
My Fair Lady.
My Fair Lady.
My Fair Lady. And
she did another one.
No, what's the one with the King and I? This is the,
oh, yeah, yeah.
This
Deborah
is the King and I.
She sang for Deborah Carr.
She did.
Mm-hmm.
She did. And there was actually a wonderful radio piece on that where speaking to the talent of this woman, this was out back right after she died, they had a piece where they showed Deborah Carr speaking. When you play the soundtrack and you hear the quality of Deborah Carr's voice and then the quality of Marnie Nixon singing, that you can't tell the difference. And they're very different between The King and I and West Side Story and My Fair Lady. They're all very, very different. And then, of course, not all that long ago in, I thought it was in the early 2009 was the quote bilingual version.
Yeah.
which, you know, I liked some of the songs that they did in Spanish, but they got rid of it. It did not last.
No.
That's kind of sad. And then the last thing in this New York Times article, it says, okay, we missed one. So there was a story that they missed. And I'm just going to read this last very short paragraph. Among the more tantalizing threads of West Side Story lore popped up not in the Times, but in an interview Lawrence gave to the Hartford Courant shortly before his death in 2011, in which he addressed the rumors that Disney had once proposed an animated version of West Side Story with, and this is topical, cats. Lawrence said, someplace I have a 7-minute reel that they made with white cats and black cats. I remember the Maria cat came down a rope of a steamer illegally into the country. In the end, I remember the Tony cat got run over. You can't believe how terrible it was.
Oh,
oh my God. What's wrong with us?
O-M-G.
Foreshadowing.
What is wrong with us? Okay. So that's West Side Story. These are all things that you can get on offstageonair.com. I have to do this one, even though we might have not have time, but this is fun. Where did I get this?
Is it about cats?
It's about cats.
It's from the Washington Post, and I know where you're... I'm like, you just brought up cats. Please tell me you're going to talk about that glorious article.
Oh, my God, it's a wonderful article.
It's the most glorious article ever.
It's... So we're all aware of cats and the critically non-acclaim it's been getting. But they went and checked out people that experienced the movie... while stoned.
And got, not just stoned.
I saw this article, not but I didn't
stoned,
read it.
People that were high, because it wasn't just marijuana. It was edibles. It okay. was weed. Yeah. It was mushrooms. It was okay. multiple different types of high.
So here's just some of the nice. Comments that came.
Sent this article to like 30 people. It made my yesterday.
Okay, here they are. The most terrifying experience of my life. I swear to God, my soul escaped me. When Judi Dench turned and looked me directly in the eyes,
oh my God,
to let me know that a cat is not a dog, I was terrified. And here too, they're kind of long, but they're funny. Soon after the tingling feeling started in her forehead, Sarah, the 26-year-old from Louisville, realized that she and her roommate had made a miscalculation. The human-like cats, and in parentheses, cat-like humans, were grotesque. Sarah couldn't stop staring at their feet. Paws. No, hands. Where their fur ends and the human hand starts. It would move into a weird, unnatural way, she says. At one point, Jenny Annie Dots, the cat played by Rebel Wilson, eats dancing cockroaches who have human faces in a horrifying scene.
Oh my God. That poor girl, though, and her friend, in context, they didn't think they were high, so they kept eating more because their edibles hadn't kicked in. So they were having this all kick in.
And so let's not discount those people that are using this for good for their education purposes. I had a realization partway through that I am the only person in the world who understands cats, says Kate, 31, a medical researcher in Chicago, who soon found herself plotting a cats-based doctoral thesis while still in the theater. She would examine the class dialect of 1930s London, when T.S. Eliot wrote the poems and inspired it, the late 80s heyday of Weber and police brutality in 2019.
Yeah,
I see how that all weaves. Sure.
That's
some
a
person
fun
wrote
one.
Like maybe I was just high, but it was the greatest thing I ever saw. Someone threw up. It just it is the greatest article ever.
And you can find that on offstageonair.com. You can click to it. Did anybody happen to see last night this new series called Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist?
I have it recorded, but I did not watch it yet. But I know what you're talking about.
I watched it, and it's quite fun.
It has the Skylar Astin in it.
Skylar Astin is in it, and this is
your
somewhat
Gilmore's Girl lady.
This is Speaking of Gilmore Girls lady,
you liked her, huh?
I do. I love that was I love Lorelai Gilmore. Don't get me started. So this is a show where a young woman who works in a tech office, she has a little issue at an MRI, and suddenly she can hear people's innermost thoughts that come out in the form of a song. It's usually a pop song, and complete with choreography, and it's I enjoyed it.
I thought it was a great little premise. I love the girl. I cannot think of her name. I fell in love
Jane
with her.
Levy.
She was on... Is that the young girl?
Yeah, the star.
I fell in love with her when she was on Suburbia years ago.
Yep.
She's
Sounds
a great
like
little
a,
actress.
It's taking Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and, you know, bumping
bit,
it
yeah.
up.
It's exactly what it kind of... It's like a mishmash of a few different things, but it's kind of... It's made me giggle.
It's got good production value. And as you say, Skylar Astin is... And I was actually... This is a little bit of a spoiler, but... 50 minutes into the season pilot, he hadn't sung, which I found interesting. But he has the closing number.
Because they wanted you to watch and wait for him to sing and then go, oh, I do like this
worth
show.
Seeing.
Instead of watching
right,
and turning
it off. We're gonna stop there because we have a lot more that I want to talk about. I will say this, that if you go to offstageonair.com, there's a a review of Death of a Salesman with what's his name from 20 from anyway, it's a good review. It's a different way take on Death of a Salesman. The family is African American, and it's just very, very different, and finds some really wonderful things. The guy that was in, I'm sorry, I gotta find and give you his.
Where
I'll come
is
up
this?
With it in New York Times. Oh, it's in London. Sorry, in the West End.
And yeah, I think it's like, close. Where's it playing?
I would guess it's going to. What was the TV show about Baltimore? The Wire.
The Wire.
So the African American policeman that was in The Wire.
Oh, that one.
Wendell Pierce.
Wendell Pierce. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, and he got incredible notices. Actually, all the actors got just major incredible notices by. I was going to say Mel Gusso. That takes me back. by what's his name? Anyway,
Ben Brantley.
Thank you. Yeah. we're going to take a little break and we're going to come back. Let's listen to a little bit of Fiddler on the Roof, and I would say that in Yiddish if I could. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
Hello.
I could have just sat and talked and talked and talked forever.
I know. There was good stuff. Lots of good stuff.
Yeah, you got to talk right into that microphone
There's still lots of good stuff.
Okay. Well, good. Well, we're going to switch gears and we're going to talk to Jarrett Productions and their show, The Niceties by Eleanor Burgess. And we are going to introduce folks. We have David Jarrett. Welcome back.
Well, thank you for having us.
And Jeremy Rashad Brown, director.
What's up?
And two of the performers, Jackie Calloway.
Here I am.
And Francesca Christian.
Hello.
Okay, I'm assuming that Jackie and Francesca, I'm pronouncing your names right.
Oh, yes. You are indeed.
Good, I did, because we usually need to ask ahead of time. you know what, we're gonna do our first little tangent now so we don't interrupt. So I think that I'm going to have Jackie, can you just give me a number between 2 and 53?
17.
17. Let's see what that is. Nope, that's not what it was.
Like, that was a sound effect.
That was the wrong thing. Here we go. Let's try this again.
Hi, this is Joe Sears, and you remember me from Tuna, Texas, and I'm asking you to turn on Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Ospen 91.7. Don't miss it.
I like how he says Ospen.
He does.
Hornsby Ospen. Okay, David Jarrett, tell us about this show. Tell us about this show.
This show was recommended to me about a year, almost a year ago, and I was looking all over trying to find a copy of the script, and I went to the publisher and found that I could get the rights to the script, but I couldn't get the script.
That's interesting.
I was about to say, well, that's a really interesting way to... I guess it's a smart way to do business in a sense.
I read a synopsis of the play and it sounded really interesting. So I thought, well, what could possibly go wrong? I'm just going to go ahead and apply for the rights. And if I don't like the play, once I read it, I can always cancel them. So I got the rights to the play almost immediately. And then...
if you can't find the script, well, I'll give you the rights to the play.
It's a best kept secret in showbiz. And then I finally found a copy of the script because the publisher hadn't published it yet, Samuel French. And I found it in an anthology of plays by women playwrights. And I loved the script. And I was very, very happy that I had obtained the rights.
You had already gone forward, yeah.
Yeah. And so it was first performed in 2017. It's been making its way around the country in regional theaters. And it's just a brilliant play that filled with ideas that are very much in the Jarrett Productions wheelhouse, and it has our entire cast of Jackie Calloway and Francesca Christian.
They've all fit here in the studio.
They all fit right here in the studio. Jeremy Rashad Brown is our director, and I'll let him set the scene for you.
Yeah, Jeremy, tell us about the show itself.
So the show itself is about this white older college female professor who is having office hours, and she has office hours with her younger black female student. And what starts out as a nice little, you know, friendly debate over the student's graded paper about the American Revolution turns into something a little bit more visceral.
So I'm guessing that we're dealing with race and class here.
Race, class, gender, generational gaps. It is a multi-layered piece that is definitely a conversation starter.
Awesome. Well, in a second, we're going to hear a little piece from it. But before we do that, I would love to hear from the actress and tell us about your characters. Jackie, tell us about your character.
Absolutely. I play Zoe. I'm an activist. I'm very committed to the causes I believe in, and I don't let anyone intimidate me.
Does Zoe have an extraordinary playlist?
Oh, extraordinary. A lot of okay.
Just wanted to make sure. And Francesca?
Janine is a professor at an elite educational institution. She teaches a very traditional version of American history. Mm-hmm. She teaches also, she's also had life experience with issues about revolution and war-torn areas, and feels very committed and passionate about bringing visibility to minority populations around the world. And yet she has a very traditional take on how she teaches.
Got
She's
it.
A big George Washington fan.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Meaning she has wooden teeth. I knew it.
You figured it out, Lisa. Don't spoil it.
So you guys are going to do a little scene from it, yes?
Yeah.
Do you want to set that up? Do we need anything to set up, or do we just jump right in?
Sure. So this particular scene that we're about to read for y'all today is basically a conversation while Janine is grading Zoe's paper. And so basically right now, Zoe is stating her case on her thesis.
Okay. So this is Jackie Calloway and Francesca Christian doing a scene from Jarrett Productions' production of The Niceties by Eleanor Burgess.
Of course. So the parallelism, the footnotes, more flair in the evidence, and then I hand it back in?
Actually, these comments were more about writing than argument. I like to offer very thorough comments purely on writing for 3 pages. Most teachers in this gothic pile don't see that as part of their job, to teach any practical skills. I'm glad you brought this in early. I can see you've done an impressive amount of work on it.
Yeah, well, I tend to get a little intense about fulfilling requirements. Only child. It's weird that you never get to graduate from being an only child to being an only adult.
True. I wish you hadn't plowed ahead like this. Written the full draft without getting comments on the thesis.
I was just excited to lay out the ideas.
I'm afraid you're in for quite a substantial rewrite. Your argument is fundamentally unsound.
Unsound?
A successful American Revolution was only possible because of the existence of slavery.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes. The whole idea came out of your lecture on how most revolutions have 2 phases. There's the initial moderate revolution led by upper-middle-class people, and they make moderate constitutional changes. But they don't help the people who are really suffering. They don't do anything about economic inequality, real injustices.
Yes, that's
And
mostly,
so, new leaders, yes, with broader popular support, take over in a second radical revolution. The moderates and the radicals can't agree, and so revolutions usually turn into violent, drawn-out conflicts, basically civil wars. That's what happened in France, in Russia, in Mexico, in China, with Mao overthrowing the nationalists. That's what you talked about in class.
Yes.
Is any part of that wrong?
No.
But in the U.S., the people who were really suffering, who would have become radicals, were the slaves. And everybody else, upper middle class white people and poor white people, were pretty happy with the way things were. That's why the U.S. never had a radical revolution. It stopped in the moderate phase and had one of the most unified, non-destructive revolutions of all time.
Is this a theory that you read somewhere? Is there a book that... What I'm trying to say is that the evidence from this period doesn't fit. You're saying that if there hadn't been slavery, poor whites would have pushed for radical economic change. But that doesn't hold up. Even in colonies like New Hampshire and Massachusetts, where slaves made up less than 2% of the population, there was no serious discussion about economic reform. Unlike France, there was no famine, no crisis. Read the letters, the diary entries. This was long before Karl Marx. The idea of democracy already felt huge and exciting and terrifying to these people. More economic change just wasn't on the table, with or without slavery.
Well, I found sources that said different.
Wealthy and poor whites were unified by their interest in preserving slavery. Where did you read that?
It's in my footnotes.
www.revolutionarywar.net. You know what they're calling your generation? I think this term is much better than millennials. Millennials makes it sound like you're all hopeful religious fanatics. Digital natives. Have you heard that?
Yeah, somewhere. I think I saw it online.
I think it's wonderful. I heard it at a modern pedagogy workshop, and another professor there for the rest of the day, he kept deliberately confusing it and saying, technological savages. Well, the trouble I have with this info from www.revolutionarywar.net is that it's wrong. 5 states abolished slavery during the war. Northern delegates to the Constitutional Convention fought tooth and nail to end the international slave trade. Far from being unified by slavery, whites were actively fighting over it.
Okay, maybe, but you can't say they weren't unified. Even if they didn't all like slavery, they were unified by not caring much about it. You said they were willing to fight over slavery at the Constitutional Convention, but how much were they willing to fight? Not enough. They compromised over it. If there had been a slave revolt, they wouldn't have supported it. They wouldn't have risked division to support it.
That is almost certainly true.
Having the biggest injustice in a society all concentrated on just 20% of the population made it easier for the rest of the population to agree. Why did the American Revolution go so much better than any other revolution in any other country ever? It's easier to be pro-equality when there is a subjugated minority in your midst.
Well, that's a horrifying possibility.
Well, Zoe, you're a little snarky.
Just a little.
Oh, you ain't seen nothing yet.
But very well thought out argument. I like, if I were to say this, I believe you won the debate.
Why, thank you.
And well, curtain call.
Well, don't say that quite yet. Don't say that quite yet.
So, well, to find out the truth, you'd have to go see it. So, David, why this show this time for Jarrett Productions?
I think the time is absolutely right for this particular production. The ideas that are expressed and the situations that we find ourselves in this country at this particular time, this is absolutely the right play in the right time.
Yeah, yeah. So
it's got a lot of big ideas and. Well, they're just very well presented. They're very, very even-handed play.
Cool. Well, yeah. It sounds like it. So it sounds like it could be. Get in there, Jeremy. Tell me about your approach as a director to this piece.
So it was really collaborative. We spent a lot of time with conversations with historical facts because this is a very history-centric play, mm-hmm. first and foremost. And so one of the notes that the playwright put in her actual script is that some of the things that these women say aren't necessarily right, aren't necessarily wrong. And so to like sift through the script and figure out what is historically factual, because I approached it in a way to where this is a debate. This mm-hmm. is a debate. Mm-hmm. And so in a debate, you have to state your case. And in order to state your case, you have to have a strong case with supportive facts. And so we tried to sift through and figure out what is factual and what is, you know, yeah. a little bit less factual, you know, just in order for them to get their case across. And yeah, it was a lot of dialogue, a lot of tuning in. And making sure like we're listening to one another so we can properly react to what the other person is saying. But mainly it's just that conversation and how this is relevant to today, what's going on right now, socioeconomically, politically, everything, and bringing that all into the actual performance space.
Yeah.
It's very witty.
Yeah. So Francesca and Jackie, it's a 2-character play. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that the two of you are on stage quite a bit of the time. That's a lot to carry. Talk about the process for you guys.
They're both only on stage for 5 minutes.
There's a lot of voiceover.
Yeah. Video, a lot of good video work.
Some movement.
We'll take a break and watch this video from Zoe's extraordinary playlist.
Love it.
So how was the process for you guys? It's a lot of weight to carry on a show.
It is. It really is a lot. It's a big job, but you know, like anything, you take it one step at a time and you move it through. And we're at a point right now, we just started technical rehearsals. Mm-hmm. So we're really feeling the flow and the movement of the whole piece, which feels like such a breath of fresh air because you're kind of building this thing. And now to really see it coming together is very exciting.
For me, it's coming up with stuff to do with my body. We're on stage for a long time. There's only so many times I can put my hands on my hips. So.
But you're not. But you're not allowed to do that. You're not,
I'm not allowed to cross my arms.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Nope.
The King and I has his hands on his hips a lot. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, it's the
that's why
international
we're not,
sign.
We're not doing it.
The King and I.
We didn't want the comparisons.
Well, there's also the issue, too, of playing big ideas. And we both are impassioned about our ideas and playing them big and playing them out, but really being in conversation
sure.
with each other. And so it's a little bit of a, it's a negotiation that goes on there.
So it sounds like it's a cerebral piece.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Which is why we had the conversations first and foremost, because awesome. That is essential.
So you're in Tex, which means you're going to open soon. When do you open?
We open next Thursday, a week from tomorrow, on January 16th. We play through February 2nd at Trinity Street Playhouse downtown in the First Baptist Church on the fourth floor at 9th and Trinity.
And I will tell folks not to, you know, a lot of people get scared by the address and the idea of finding parking.
No.
I've never had a problem finding parking.
It's quite lovely.
It's quite lovely. And where
don't say that often either.
No. Where can folks go to get more information?
www.jarrettproductions.com.
Jarrettproductions.com. Well, thank you so much.
Thank
for
you
coming
all so
on the
much.
Show.
Thank you for that scene. That
sounds
really,
like a great scene.
Yeah,
a great show. Awesome. Looking forward to seeing it and seeing who actually wins.
Joey, all the way.
So that was David Jarrett, Jeremy Rashad Brown, Jackie Calloway, and Francesca Christian of Jarrett Productions. Production of The Niceties by Eleanor Burgess, playing January 16th through February 2nd at the Trinity Street Playhouse. For more information, jarrettproductions.com. We'll be back.
There's a day of a whole.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP, here with Lisa and Nicole.
Hello.
I'm going to just, thank you. I was trying to figure, I'm here on the air, everybody's chit-chatting away in the studio. I was trying to figure out how to tell people to be quiet without showing my hand, but I couldn't do that. So we'll take a moment to talk about some local stuff. First of all, the Unified Auditions are coming up in February, February 2nd, I believe.
That sounds right.
Well worth it. If you're a performer here in town or... they now have interviews for technicians, stage managers, and whatever. And David, you've come to watch the Unified Auditions before.
Yes, it's amazing.
Amazing. It's really great, and there's some wonderful talent. I found some people. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to be there this year, but I believe Patty from our theater company will be there. So for more information and to sign up for it, you can go to austincreativealliance.org.
We have a representative there.
Good. Ground Floor Theater should. We don't know. if we're doing our job right. And then I want to say, I'd already picked this before they requested to come on the show. They're going to be on the show in a couple of weeks. But City Theater is doing art. Yasmina Reza's.
That was my thing. Yeah, I haven't seen people do that in a while either.
It was done here once about 6-7 years ago. I forgot who did it. Was it Zach?
No, it was the first production of Penfold Theater Company.
That's what
was
it was.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
So, okay.
Huh? Art.
Penfold.
Art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
That's
so,
why I was like, once, but it's been a while. It's a good show.
Yep. So that, well, it's...
I think I'm right on that, but maybe not.
I think you might be.
I'm not sure. I'm not going to even guess.
Happens.
But for information, you can go to citytheateraustin.org or wait 2 weeks. It'll be right here on the show.
Boom, boom, boom.
Boom, boom, boom. And then, do you have anything else?
No, I had the art bit, and then I didn't know if they were coming on. So you answered, I was going to ask you. You answered all of my questions.
There you go.
And
well,
then some.
Well, let's go right into Today in Theater History.
Today in Theater History,
Today
Lisa.
In Theater History.
What happened?
Well, this is an interesting one. I did not know about this. I knew about half of it. So 1906, a drama by Thomas Dixon called The Klansman opened on Broadway, painting a sympathetic picture of the aims of the Ku Klux Klan. It ran for 51 performances. And they say, ironically, it was at the Liberty Theater.
There's a joke.
But it was the show that was adapted by D.W. Griffith for Birth of a Nation, which I did see. The Birth of a Nation was shocking. Yeah, it's awful. The current one is not. I like the current one.
I would agree.
Yeah. Anyway, 1912 is the birthday of Jose Ferrer. He's done a lot of stuff. He's done a lot of directing. He's best known for Cyrano de Bergerac.
I was like, Cyrano.
Cyrano. And this is also the birthday of Theron Musser, who just passed away a few years ago. Right?
Am I right?
I think so.
Yeah.
So
she was a lighting designer. Mm-hmm. She did everything. 1981, the Pirates of Penzance moved to Broadway from the Delcourt Theater. And this was the show that had
Linda Ronstadt.
Linda Ronstadt.
I just watched the Linda Ronstadt documentary, which is epically awesome. And they did the whole Pirates.
It also had Kevin Kline.
Yes.
George Rose, Rex Smith, Estelle Parsons. It ran for 787 performances, and it is a record. I guess it's a current standing record for Gilbert and Sullivan show.
It's because Linda Ronstadt has set all the records, so why not just set it there, too?
1989, 42nd Street closed after almost 3,500 performances. It's the longest run ever for producer David Merrick, my favorite producer.
There's some tapping for you.
Yeah. There's the tapping. Let's see, I'm going to skip. This was the 2006, the Harvey Fierstein revival of Fiddle on the Roof closed. Did anybody see Fiddler with Harvey Fierstein here in Austin?
Oh, no, I saw it in New York.
With Harvey Fierstein?
Mm-hmm.
I pronounce it both ways, by the way. Fierstein and Fierstein.
I saw him and Rosie O'Donnell.
She was also in that.
Yes, but I saw them. But they played together and at separate times. Yeah. I happened to see it when they were.
Anyway, I was not crazy about his performance when he was here. There, that's it.
I do
2007
love that show.
Is the death anniversary for Yvonne DiCarlo. Mm. People will most remember her for Follies, but probably really
the Munsters.
And in 2012, Billy Elliot closed on Broadway. And, you know, they
seems even further back. Really, it was only 2012.
Yeah. And Billy Elliot used three different Billies during the shows. And on that final performance, they split up the show. So they each got to do the final performance. I thought that was interesting.
It's a multi-Billy.
Other birthdays. Larry Storch from F Troop and other things, I suppose. Soupy Sales. Elvis Presley.
I did The Wizard of Oz with Soupy Sales. He played the wizard.
Okay.
Yeah, that was in New York, in Syracuse. Oh, yes, and our special effects guy was the guy who did Freddy Krueger, Friday the 13th.
Okay, well, we have to
and
stop.
And it's David Bowie's birthday. You can't leave David Bowie off.
But
sorry.
We still have to stop. We will be right back. I am the vetted model of a monster. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
Shep's and Chiro.
We're going to run right into our next guest, so we have plenty of time to talk
Let's
to them.
Let's do it.
Okay. Austin Plowhouse is producing the show Tiny Beautiful Things, adapted by Nia Vardalos.
Yes. Love me some Nia.
And we have here two of the stars of this four-person show, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes, half the cast.
Half the cast. Barbara Chisholm Ferris is here.
Hi.
As well as Lowell Bartholomew.
Hi.
And we missed Marie Falgren was here earlier, but she came in and she went away, just like a little...
We have what you would call 50-50.
We have 50-50. So tell us about the show.
It is a play adapted from the book by Cheryl Strayed, whom we know and love from Wild, the book that was adapted into a film starring Reese Witherspoon is so wonderful. Cheryl Strayed is a writer I think a lot of us are familiar with. She is a very heartfelt, open, revealing, compassionate, beautiful writer. She was the advice columnist Dear Sugar online right. for many years. And this book and then this play is based on some actual letters and responses. So the play, there are three fab bean actors, Lowell, my friend here, and Crystal Bird and John Christopher play, somewhere I read something like y'all play about 25 characters each.
I haven't counted.
Oh, really?
Wow. Wow.
But
they're
writing, you know, all the letters. And then I play the Dear Sugar.
You're a Dear
Cheryl
Sugar.
Strait. I'm Cheryl Strait.
And this show is directed by a friend of yours or a relative of yours.
Somebody
is it not?
I know and met
tangentially.
Recently. I mean, we've been kind of casual acquaintances mm-hmm. for a while. My daughter is directing this show.
Love that.
And what's really kind of freaky is like, oh, wait, how can a little girl do that? Oh, wait, she's a grown ass woman.
Yeah.
She is a grown ass woman.
So,
and quite a little powerhouse, I might say.
Well, we think so.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So hopefully, I mean, if you're going to stick around for backstage, we want to hear more about that.
Well, I'll be happy to talk.
But the show, is it a comedy? Does it? Can it defy?
There are some funny bits.
Uh-huh. It is. It's. I mean, it's her answering letters. So there's another letter coming every page or two, mm-hmm. and those jump from. Those it runs the gamut.
Is there a narrative thread that holds them all together?
Humans, the human experience, I would say. I mean, these are people writing. You know, one doesn't write a letter to an advice columnist when everything's going swimmingly. Right, exactly. When things are going well. So these are people asking for advice, and some of the advice they seek is like, come on, dude. And other advice is, this is the most heartbreaking thing you've ever heard in your life, and how do I go on?
But for a play with no songs, it's kind of constructed like a musical, because it has like opening, and then there's group numbers, and then there's solos.
Interesting.
Look at you.
It kind of builds to these little show closers, uh-huh. and then there's sort of a final fireworks display, and then
you go. Thank you for coming on the show.
It's a non-musical musical.
So are y'all prepared to do a little scene today?
Sure, we are.
So do you want to set it up for us at all?
There's not really a setup for
it. Yeah, these are letters. He's going to write a letter, and I'll respond.
We'll learn your character
through
the text.
This is just one of the letters that came in. Here we go.
Well, this is Barbara Chisholm and Lowell Bartholomew doing a scene from Austin Playhouse production of Tiny Beautiful Things.
Dear Sugar, kind of crazy, but my girlfriend is seriously turned on by Santa Claus. The old dude, big belly, white beard, his power to tell whether you're naughty or nice, the whole thing just gets her going. Now, this is our first Christmas together. She told me about the fantasy when Santa started to pop up all over the place, and she gets especially turned on when she sees an actual Santa, which starts her thinking about sitting in his lap and what might happen next. So you get the picture. My question is, my sister has two young boys. She bought a Santa suit a few years ago, and I've been dressing up in it and going over to her place to give my nephews a thrill on Christmas Eve. Anyway, it occurred to me, if I kept the suit a bit, I could give my girlfriend a thrill, too. Creepy, good idea, bad idea. What do you make of this plan? Thanks, Sexy Santa.
Dear Sexy Santa, your giving spirit is genuinely what the holiday season is all about. I say, stuff that woman's stocking the way only Santa knows how. Yours, Sugar.
Oh, my.
So that's good advice.
Well, it was good advice.
Bum, 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 bum.
Good advice. Good advice.
Good advice. Nothing in it. It's worth the price.
Wow. Alan Sherman. Thank
Ladies
you.
Ladies and
Alan
gentlemen,
Sherman fan.
Barbara and Lisa will be taking that on the road.
So, Lowell, you're playing a whole bunch of different letter writers.
Yeah,
do you have a favorite, or is it Sexy Santa? It's hard to get better than Sexy Santa.
And that one kind of comes around the middle, I think. So that is kind of a nice.
So does Santa.
It's a little marketing.
Comes around the middle. Never mind.
We're going to work on that.
No, you guys went in a different place than I was.
Okay,
I was thinking
middle. Gotcha.
Bowl full of giggles like a bowl full of jelly.
Mm. It does.
But now the whole thing has sort of, for the three of us, has sort of it's almost a game. It's just like, okay, do this. Now do this. Now do this. be this person.
Now, does Sugar ever get the opportunity to have a back and forth with any of hers?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's that kind of, because of the way the Dear Sugar column worked online, there was a lot of back and forth.
Okay.
And so that kind of works in here. And Sugar... when Cheryl Strayed took over, she was not the original Sugar, but when she took over the Dear Sugar column, it is her want and the way she works and operates and writes in the world to share a lot of her personal experiences. Mm-hmm. So we get a lot of that.
You get a lot of that.
Well, yeah. And I wanted to say, you asked a great question
every
of
now
our
and
previous
then that
guest,
happens.
Why now?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what Brent Ben Brantley wrote when it opened in New York in 2017, "Tiny Beautiful Things turns out to provide an ideal catharsis for those suffering from the various deep-dyed blues that are so contagious right now. I mean post-election blues, holiday blues, end-of-the-year blues, all those afflictions that make us feel cranky, thin-skinned, and intolerant." And I thought, yep, that is very smart
of you to pull that. Oh, Barbara.
I'm very smart because I can, you know, read things online. I think what appeals to me and what has appealed to me about this play for so long is that it is about deep listening and it's about deeply caring about humans. Mm-hmm. And instead of skating over continents, it's really about. Yeah. Really talking deeply and connecting deeply with people.
I'd agree with that. Getting to hear it over and over and over again for the last 2 or 3 weeks has been some of the best therapy and a really good time for it.
Awesome. So, yeah. When do you guys open?
We open Friday.
You open Friday.
That is January 10th, and we run through February 2nd, Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 and Sundays at 5, and there is a 2 p.m. matinee somewhere in that, and you can find out more information about that at austintheater.com.
Austinplayhouse.com.
That's a better place to go. That's a better
AustinTheater.com. Austin, you might eventually
go there somehow, but if you go to AustinPlayhouse.com, then you'll really know.
You'll know. Thank you guys for coming.
Thank you so much for having us.
And good luck. I'm looking forward to seeing
you. Thank you for
the
show.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
You are welcome. So that was Barbara Chisholm and Lowell Bartholomew with Austin Playhouse's production of Tiny Beautiful Things, adapted by Nia Vardalos, playing January 10th through February 2nd at Austin Playhouse. For more information, austinplayhouse.com. We don't have time for music. We're just going to have to say goodbye
and
go.
La, 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 there it is.
There you go. La, 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 la. Do all the things.
We could do all the things.
Offstageonair.com.
All day long.
Stitcher, all that good stuff.
All that. So we're gonna walk away with a song from Wanda's World.
Yes. Yeah, tell me about Wanda.
Very good world. It's kind of a teen kind of show about a talk show. Anyway, Austin Monitor News is next if you're on the terrestrial. If you're not, stand by for Backstage at Offstage. We'll be back next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. See ya.
Bye.
Live from Cheese Valley, it's the top-rated, number one television show in the nation. It's Wanda's World.
The curtain has just come down on Wayne's World, the musical.
Swing!
The story of a young man who falls in love with a girl named Wanda. And joins her show called Wanda's World.
Schwing, schwing. Schwing.
So here we are backstage. We've left the theater. We're backstage amongst the dumpsters. It's a beautiful day out.
It is a beautiful day out.
We have an all-star group back here.
We do. I'm kind of excited about our
right here.
When are they coming in?
We have the all-stars of Austin here. We have royalty. We have Lowell Bartholomew.
Hi.
Barbara Chisholm.
Hello.
Now, Barbara Chisholm or Barbara Chisholm Ferris?
My equity name is Barbara Chisholm, but my legal name is Barbara Chisholm Ferris.
Okay. All right, we'll call you. If you notice, I switched around.
See, that was crafty.
And Jeremy Rashad Brown.
Hello.
Hello. I need to start right with Barbara, maybe a little bit of Lowell. I mean, your daughter is directing this show.
I know.
What? So tell me how that...
Is
this a role reversal? Are you easily able to allow her to take the reins?
I just tell her, no, I'm not doing that.
Okay. Good. Well, thank you for being on the show.
No, there's no way I'm doing that, Roz. Our daughter, Rosalyn, has been a theater artist she got her degree in theater and dance.
Easy for
theater
you to
and
say.
Dance with a focus in directing. And I've loved her work and... the thing you need to know most about Rosalyn, if you need to know something, is that she has one of the most open, compassionate hearts of any human I learn from her all the time about how to be a better person. With regard to this particular play, I've been dying to do this play ever since I heard that it was developed into a mm-hmm. play, because I was familiar with the book and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I heard through the grapevine that, oh my gosh, this is being developed at the Public. So yeah. I wrote my friend at the Public and said, oh man, send me the work in progress. Send me the script in progress. And I've been like pitching this all over the country, like, ooh, somebody do this play. Ooh, do this play. Ooh, do this play. And there was all this interest here and there. And then completely unbeknownst to me, I see it was on the Austin Playhouse season here. I mean,
I wasn't even thinking in town.
So before I even had a chance to contact them and said, I'd be really interested in auditioning for this project. My daughter texted me one day when I was at work and said, call me when you can. I have some crazy news.
Oh, no.
She said, Austin Playhouse just called me and offered me the directing gig for Tiny Beautiful Things. I was like, what? Wait, you got an offer? she has known, for how long I've wanted to do this. So I had to freaking audition for my daughter.
Did you really have to audition?
Oh, I totally did.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I would divorce your child. Perhaps you don't know who I am, young lady.
It's a really great fit for her and her sensibilities. Mm-hmm. I think I will not pretend to be objective.
Of course
not.
But
I'm also not an idiot.
She's rightly been hailed around as a powerhouse, as I said earlier. So that's true.
Well, she'll be happy to hear you say
that. So you've not been backstage with us before.
No,
correct?
I haven't. I didn't even know I had a backstage pass.
You do. You have a lifelong backstage pass. Where do you hail from?
In my life?
You find theater?
I think like many of us, it found me. My father was in the military in the Foreign Service, so I moved around a lot.
Okay.
In broad strokes, I went to elementary school in D.C. and went to high school in Germany.
And how did how did Austin become part of your?
My parents, when my dad retired, my mother grew up in San Antonio, so she considers herself a Texan. And when my parents retired, they retired to San Antonio. What was a tragedy of my life, in the middle of my senior year, I had to change high schools from Germany to San Antonio.
Oh my God, what a change.
Oh, it blew so hard.
I went from Dallas High School of Performing Arts to Syracuse, New York.
What the hell? Isn't it the worst?
It's a nightmare.
I got over it last week.
I'm still not over it.
Yeah, well, I'm older than you.
I went from Hunter's Creek Elementary to Frostwood Elementary.
Yeah, but that's elementary.
That was terrible.
But your senior year, it's hard.
I couldn't imagine. That would be awful.
It's a nightmare.
That was a culture shock for me between those two, but I can only imagine from countries like that. Yeah. Like, whoa.
So at the time, I was like, Texas blows, and I hate everything. And then I went to college, and then after school, my parents were living in San Antonio, and I was at Catholic University in D.C., and all my classmates were going to New York. And honestly, I was too afraid. I didn't have the courage. And I thought, I do not want to go to New York, but I don't know what to do. So I'm going to go to San Antonio and just, sit down for a month or so and figure out what to do. And at the time, one of my brothers, I'm number six in a family. Wow. So one of my brothers was living in Austin, and he said, oh, you should come to Austin. It's not like what everybody says about Austin. It's not like the rest of Texas, blah, blah, blah. So I thought, okay, I'll go to Austin for a couple of months, work here, and then I'll get my shit to. I'll get my act together. And then I'm going to go to New York and like cut to, it's 2020.
Not too late.
I'm good now. I mean, I work around the country, but it was the first time in my life I've ever had a home. Mm. And I've never had that before.
Well, good. Well,
and that took a long time for me to understand. When people would talk about, oh, I'm part of this community, I would be like, yeah, that means you know the bus system, you know? And it was like, no, it's something deep. And I didn't really understand what that meant for the longest time. I was like, yeah, part of a community. You have a phone number with the area code. And it's like, no.
A little bit more.
It's more than that. And now I know what that means.
Awesome. It's a lovely tale. Last question I have for you is, you are an equity member. How did you get your equity card?
It's a circuitous tale, but when my husband and I were living in San Diego, which is where Rosalind was born, and I was hired to do a production of The Women with Anne Bogart, which was, you know, a phenomenal piece of good fortune. And it was so that was done at the San Diego Playhouse. Mm-hmm. California is not a right to work state, which I think that's right. The silliest misnomer of a, but that's a conversation for another
conversation.
Time.
Right.
Anyway, so I had to become a member of Equity. So I thought I did. And then we moved back to Austin. And because I did all whatever paperwork and money, and I don't know, I'm sure it was a clerical error on their side, but it was like, oh, somehow I wasn't really. So actually that worked out in my favor because it wasn't so advantageous to be equity
correct.
Here.
Mm-hmm.
But since then I've become active because I'm working in various theaters right. around the country where it's a necessity.
Well, it's different. Like when I got my equity card, the only way you could get an equity card at the time was to be offered a contract, very much like you did.
Uh-huh.
But you could only audition for things if you were equity. There's
right. You can't go unless you've been there.
Everybody had this little finagly way to do it. And that's why I typically ask people
right.
if they've been around long.
Well, I'm not now. You I mean, can, for a long, yeah, yeah there's yeah, what do you call the equity, whatever.
The point. They have the points.
Yeah, the points.
There was no points. Yeah, it was the contract and this and that.
Right.
And then no one ever tells you either about, you know, the stop hold either, that like you can stop and put a hold on your equity. And
I'm just learning this now.
I did for about 20 years I was on hold.
So then people think like they either have to stay equity forever and then can't work this way or that way. No, you can stop hold your
But even if you read the rules in theory, because I just read this just recently, if you are officially inactive on equity, you still are not legally allowed to do non-equity work. That's interesting.
We love them.
Until you've been there.
Just keep a big smile on your face.
And I think there's another thing, and like, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm still doing some research on it. Well, thank you, Lisa. But like being a member of SAG-AFTRA, and if you're a member of that organization, since equity and SAG became, you know, sister organizations, that if you're a member of the SAG agency, you're able to.
It used to be that way. I don't know if it's that way again.
Oh, I thought that was.
It used to be if you were any of the 4As, you could do that.
You could do that, but maybe.
But I'm not sure if you could do that because it's just because they're all so.
It's convoluted.
Convoluted, yeah. So, Jeremy, what's your story? Where are you from? How'd you find theater?
Well, I'm from Waxahachie, Texas.
Waxahachie.
That is one of my favorite words. I just love every
Lowell,
time
you're
I drive
from Texas?
North of Dallas.
Yep.
I love seeing it. Waxahachie. You
like
said
phonetically,
Wax.
Well, Wax. It's
Wax. Oh,
not Wax.
Not Wax.
It's Wax.
No, it's Wax, not
it
run.
It is so gorgeous. I just love that
word. So Waxahachie, Texas.
Yeah, straight out of a Thomas Kincaid painting.
And so did you do theater in Waxahachie?
I did, to the credit of my high school theater teacher Andy Reynolds. Shout out to Mr. Reynolds.
Yeah, Andy Reynolds.
He really got me into theater. He was an amazing drama teacher, and I just kind of like took to it. But it wasn't until a couple of years ago to where I got serious about it, because I was like, I'm gonna go to UT. Ooh, I can't make any money being an artist. I want to get something more practical. And that still didn't pan out. So I went ahead and just like went balls to the wall. I can say that.
Yeah.
And just became a full-time artist about 3 years ago.
Mazel
and,
tov.
I was reintroduced to theater back in 2017. He's going to love this. My Matrix Kilgore.
Yay,
Matrix.
My first Austin production was Tali English Beckwith's 28 at the Vortex.
Uh-huh.
That happened that August in 2017. And I just fell in love with it ever since. And you talk about community, Barbara. That's when I was introduced to the Austin theater community. And I've just been in love ever since.
I've seen you just really like creating right and left since I met you a few years ago. And I'm just like, oh, that little creative monster.
I can't help it.
Which is not a bad thing. Creative monsters. Monsters are good
brilliant.
Monsters.
That makes me so happy.
Mm-hmm. And too. Did you start your theater life in high school or before? Did you come from, were your family artists?
My mother is a singer,
uh-huh.
but she never was able to go anywhere and do anything with it. The reason why I hustle so hard
is your mother is Beyonce?
Her. She might as well be because, I mean, that woman works her fingers to the bone. And so, yeah, I hustle for her too. She was a singer, and I've always had an artistic bug in me, but I always kind of stifled it because I was like, meh, I'm shy. I don't want to,
I should be more practical.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I was like, forget all of that.
When people ask me to describe you, the first thing I say is he's very shy.
But I am. I'm such an introvert.
It's okay.
Such an introvert. Like, even on my birthday, like this past Monday, I slept all day.
It's your birthday.
All night.
Happy birthday.
That's happy birthday. Birthday.
You burying the lead actually. There.
I tried.
So, Lowell, you said you're from Texas as well?
I was born in North Texas. I grew up in Baltimore.
Balmer.
Yeah.
Well, then you should have answered. Oh, you did answer the Wendell.
I knew who Wendell Pierce was. The Wire keeps everybody who was raised in Baltimore like up to date.
Yeah,
it's a test you have to pass every year.
At what age did you move to Balmer?
I was two.
Two. Oh, okay, yeah. So you remember. Did you go through high school all through? High school?
Oh yeah, I was there until college.
And why did you come to Texas?
Things weren't working out where I was, and I had gone for 2 years of, or really 1 year of college with Alan Robertson, who people may know.
And I didn't realize you guys went to school together.
Just briefly.
But
we
still,
passed
yeah.
like ships. And right before I left for NYU, I helped him type up a show he was working on. And then there were like a couple of scenes where he was like, oh, this thing happens. And I was like, oh, just write a thing. And so I wrote like these two scenes just to kind of finish it out. And so cut to years later, I wasn't really doing anything, and I was talking to him, and he was like, hey, this company in town is producing the show. And then I think as a joke, he said, you should come do those two parts you wrote. And I went, I could be there on Tuesday. Then I unplugged my phone and never allowed him to call back, and then just showed up at his house on Tuesday. I was a man of my word. And I did the show, and I planned on going back to L.A. That's where I was. And just didn't go back.
Didn't go back?
Mm. Yeah, cut to 20.
Well, and you,
story.
You are.
Cutaways.
And it's 20.
No star swipes.
Well, and Lowell, you're a master of so many things. And we know, many of us know you as a really excellent sound designer, video designer,
writer.
Actor, writer. Do you do costumes as well?
No. Okay. Don't do lights either, or sets. There's a lot I don't do. But that's really just somebody had advice a long time ago that was like, if you want to work in this, just don't go home. And then
I like that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I really like that.
You just have to be there. And a friend of mine, good friend of mine, who's also a designer, said that when he went into college and started acting, to study acting, the first thing the teacher said was, everybody here has to learn how to do a trade in the theater. If you want to work in the theater, that's great. But go learn something else, because you're probably not going to be able to do this all the time. You're not going to be able to be an actor all the time.
That is such an important advice.
I thought that was really good advice.
And I think you can point
wishing
to...
Wishing I had a skill.
Yeah. That's what my main big... theater teacher said, you have to know every aspect of theater to be a good actor.
Yeah.
That's what I had.
And
I
therefore, when I made the switch, when I wasn't making as an actor in New York, I went into stage management and directing, and that was it. But if I didn't have that background, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
So, Barbara, you have no other skills other than performing? I
have no other skills. Skills. Full stop.
Oh, no.
No, I mean,
I've always thought of you.
I mean,
hack.
I'm really. I can produce. I do like producing, and I've done that.
You've produced some good stuff.
I really love doing that.
But you could.
But I am not a stage manager. No, and I have no interest and no facility at all because, and it took me a while to, you know, to be able to understand in my head why I'm not a director. And it's because I don't have what you have, you, and I'm pointing to these gentlemen. I don't have a 10,000 foot view of a play. I get to a play. My on-ramp is always through a character. And I, if I directed a play, it would be a series of scenes. And it would not it would not be a whole thing. And when I hear directors talk about, you know, the whole shape of it, I'm like, I don't know, because I'm in the swim. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm not there. I don't have that. And it's just a point of view I don't have. But I am really good at organizing, and I will get stuff done, and producing is super, super, super hard. Like, I'm telling you something you don't know.
I don't know.
So you need to listen up, Lisa, because this is news you can use. And so it's not something I take on frequently, but it is so incredibly gratifying. Yeah. I think one of the most exciting moments I ever had in my life was when I was producing a show at the now the departed Off Center, and I came in one day, it was build day, and there were people hanging lights, and there was a crew assembling a set, and you know, all this activity was going on. Having no skill, I was just standing there, but I thought I got all these people a job.
I did this. Right.
I got all the, and I'm paying every single person here. That felt amazing. Yes. That felt absolutely amazing. Yes. Yeah.
You did a thing.
Awesome.
I did a thing.
And we're lucky to have you here for that. And
when they
else.
Said, could you help with this? I was like, no, I really can't, because I really don't know. It's not that I don't want to. I mean, I like literally don't know.
So, Jeremy, what other tricks do you have in your theatrical bag?
Well, that bag is still growing.
One would assume it will always will continue to do that.
It's like Mary Poppins.
I was just about to say, is it a Mary Poppins bag? Just keep it going.
Like a bag of shrimp. I recently got into writing last year, and so I fell in love with that. I've always been writing screenplays, like pretty much all my life. You know, how you just sit at home and you're bored and... Well,
you make
maybe
your own movie in your
head. Yeah, you make your own movie.
I love
in your
how you say,
like,
you know how you do. You know how you do. You know, like you do.
Well, I mean, Barbara, I just made a movie last night in my house. I don't know what you were doing.
It's like, let your imagination run free. It just happens to run free on paper. But I always did that. And so to see one of my works finally come into like full fruition was very gratifying. When you talk about producing.
Do you have one of your screenplays that's being produced or has been produced?
It is being looked at right now, one of my short screenplays, specifically about a black father and his younger black son, and how that relationship needs to be more edified in mainstream media.
Yes.
Because, I mean, it like we do have really good fathers out here. Right. You know, and so we need to show that. And so, that's being looked at currently. I can't say by who right now, but it's being looked at.
No, but Steven Spielberg told me that he was talking to you.
Do you know this guy? Can you vouch for him?
I got a call. Jeremy Rashad Brown, I don't know who that is. I say, Steve, buddy, just call
let me
him
fill
up.
You in. Hold on.
Well, thank you all for joining us back here by the dumpster.
Gosh, you're so nice to have us.
Let's go back in and have some champagne to celebrate this.
I guess we should quickly ask, is there anywhere, do you have websites that people could go to find more information about you
or places? You know, somebody asked me, at this stage, but somebody asked me just today, what's your goal for 2020? And I was like, I don't have a goal. And you can look back on my life and see that clearly. You know, it's just kind of like, I feel like I stumble forward. Getting
a website
would be a really good one. Because I can't tell you how many times casting directors and so forth say, where's your website?
Yeah.
Like,
what's your social media looking like?
I'm
not on Facebook either, so. I'm really a pain.
Well, you can find me.
there you go.
I mean, they're only destroying democracy, but you guys have fun.
Showing us how it's done.
www.jeremyrashadbrown.com JeremyRashadBrown.com, colorbrown.com.
Excellent. Do you have a website? Do you have a NicoleShiro.com?
No, I should, though. No. I was just feeling, I'm like, I always ask people that, and I feel inadequate. Like, I should, yeah, get on.
I own LisaSheps.com, but I mean,
it was a big thing when I put my reel together, thanks to Lowell, and I was like, done. You know, I am done. Right. Of course, that reel just never done. Sits what's over a reel here. Done? Nobody exactly. can see it. Like, what's the point? I mean, my agent has it.
People have my email address. Just ask around. Yeah. I answer email.
Look in the phone book. Oh, wait.
Yeah. No, there's no phone work. Book.
Yeah. Let your fingers do the walking.
Go.
Let your fingers
go. Go.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thanks.
And let's do this more often.
Sure.
Appreciate
it. Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bye.